Healthy Children with the American Academy of Pediatrics on Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
Here's Melanie Cole.
I have one child who was like a Stepford child, never did it, but my second child, my little girl, was the major tantrum thrower. And as a parent, it's so frustrating. You get so angry, you get so worked up, your blood boils, and that just makes the situation worse. How do you deal with temper tantrums, no matter what the age of the kids are? My guest, Dr. Wendy Sue Swanson, board-certified pediatrician, mother of two, and also Seattle Children's Hospital, Seattle Mama Doc blog. Welcome to the show. So, Dr. Swanson, tantrums, what are some of your best advice for parents about these things?
Yeah, Melanie, you're right. It mimics what you said, that, of course, there are two sufferers during a tantrum. It's the child who's going through the tantrum, and we'll talk about the blend of anger and sadness that comes up during a tantrum. And then there's us who have to support it. I mean, I remember blogging about this just like you. I have one child who doesn't really tantrum at all. And then I have one that lots of people like to call a spirited child who, you know, kind of was just emotional and labile and excited and angry about everything from the very beginning. So, you know, I think what we have to remember whenever we're dealing with a tantrum is kind of what is the best behavior so that all of us don't suffer as much. That being said, we'll always prioritize kind of the suffering in our kids. And I think there is some new information about tantrums really from a generation ago, in that it used to be really thought that tantrums kind of began in a fit of anger and resolved in sadness. And I think there's new data to really say there is a pretty typical kind of anatomy to a tantrum. So, you know, a tantrum starts usually because even in a child who can communicate verbally, something is happening that they don't feel in control of, they disagree with, and they get angry. So they start by yelling. You know, I mean, even when they've got words, they'll stop using the words that they know and they'll start screaming. And then the yelling really transitions to kind of physical action. So the kicking, the flopping on the floor, the writhing around and rolling all over the place, the kind of pushing away from a parent. And then the anatomy of the tantrum ends really in this kind of crying and whining phase. But I think we have to remember, and I think it helped me as a parent, that during that whole time, the yelling, the physical actions, the pushing away, the not being able to listen, and the crying and the whining, it is a blend of anger and sadness. So as we support our kids, and at best when they're in that angry phase, we really don't want to do anything, which is really hard to do. But remembering that not only are they angry and screaming at us, they also are coming out of and stemming from a place of sadness. And I must tell you, it kind of helped calm me down. As opposed to getting angry in return, I could think about, oh, he feels so sad when this is happening.
I did that too, and I felt so bad for them when that part comes, when that sadness comes, and you feel bad for getting so mad that you just want to like shake that child until they stop screaming and stop crying. And you say this, you know, emotional and spirited, and mine actually tends to be more creative and brilliant compared to the non-tantruming son. So maybe there is something to that spiritedness.
Yeah, well, I think you're right. I think we pick up on this personality stuff, right? So my tantrumer is really creative too. So
that's, you know, I hear that all the time.
Yeah, and artistic and different.
So yeah, mine too.
You know, it's just a different expression of emotions. You know, what I think is so hard is we live in a culture that doesn't like crying, doesn't like noise from our children, really, and intolerant. So what the suffering that comes from parents is when, of course, this happens not just at home, but it happens at the bus stop. I wrote a blog post at one point. I remember my son had an epic tantrum at the Oakland airport. I mean, and it was just like, you know, excruciating. I had to hold him back from traffic, and it was humiliating in some ways. So I think when we're thinking about how do we do it, first off, acknowledging that it's a blend of anger and sadness sometimes calms us down. Instead of getting and so angry, can we think about, gosh, my child is suffering. Let me just be here and available. You know, when a child's moving through a tantrum, you know, some kids move through tantrums in 2-3 minutes. Some children will really, you know, what I call perseverate, stick on the frustration or anger and sadness for, you know, 20 minutes, and I'm not exaggerating. So it's a really big, you know, span of time, and it changes, of course, during toddlerhood and the preschool years and even early school years. So what you want to help your child do, though, is move from that really angry yelling time to get kind of through that anatomy into the action and into the crying and whining. And most research really suggests doing nothing is the best thing.
Okay, doing nothing. So just ignoring.
Nothing. So, don't respond. Don't, as best you can, don't laugh. Don't mock. Don't get angry. I mean, I remember one time in a terrible mistake, I took out my phone thinking, like, I'm going to video him so he can see this. And I mean, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That made my son, you know.
I know. And that, when I've tried to mock, because my brother said, oh, we used to laugh at our kids. And then they'd be like so surprised they'd stop. So I did that. And it just made my daughter so much more unhappy.
And
but
I was even
lucky.
Trying to mock. I was just thinking, like, how can I even endure this myself?
And show
but
him
I think,
that. See?
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Now, I will say I was lucky. Mine never did it in public. It was only at home. And my pediatrician said, well, you're lucky she saves her shtick for you.
Yeah.
At home, it's just her
and
need to get it out.
Do,
so
right?
Your first advice is to ignore.
Yeah.
What
so
do you do with your own anger?
As best you can. You know, getting them through the period of anger. Asking questions during that time is probably not productive and just prolongs that really angry yelling time. So ignoring, not responding, any reaction is reinforcement of some kind. And we don't want any reaction and any negative nor positive reinforcement do we want during that phase. You know, I think the other thing to really do is, as you're moving out of the angry yelly phase, giving your child control over something. So offering a small directed choice. Hold on to the cucumber or the glass of water. Why don't you choose this stuffed animal over that stuffed animal, right? Just some sort of control that they can feel in the moment that has nothing to do with the tantrum at all. That serves two purposes. Gives them a sense of control over something and also provides distraction.
Okay, Dr. Swanson, how do you ignore if it is out in public? If they're at the grocery store, and we've all seen those poor parents, or they're on an airplane, you can't ignore.
Yeah.
You want them just to shut up.
Airplane's a really different space, I think, because, you know, we want to make that noise go away. So number one, you'd said something like it makes, you know, the anger that we feel when a child is screaming and crying and quote-unquote hysterical, right, we want to make it go away. So as a quick reminder, when babies cry, the last thing we ever want, you know, people to do is shake them. We know that crying is a trigger for shaking or harming a child. So same kind of feelings get, you know, are evoked in us when even our children are older. So when you're in a plane, when you're in public, I think you'd still do your very best to ignore, even when people are staring and pointing and stopping and looking. I think it feels like judgment when that happens, but a lot of parents are just looking at you thinking, I was there once too. So just keeping your cool is still always going to be the best. You have to protect your child from physical danger, right? So my mega tantrum that I had with my son at the airport, I had to hold him back physically at one point so he didn't run out into the traffic lane. Sometimes we just have to do that. It makes it just a dramatic display, but sometimes we do that too. And I think, so ignoring as best you can and letting it ride its course. Remember, asking questions, intervening, coaching, and prompting will sometimes prolong a tantrum, not make it go faster.
And Dr. Swanson, we have a question from a listener. Should you ignore the hitting, spitting, kicking, and scratching?
Yes.
How do you ignore
my
those
next
things?
Point. Yeah. So
and we only have a minute left.
Yeah, you can't ignore that. There's a zero tolerance for a couple of things. In our homes, we always need a zero tolerance for biting, kicking, and throwing. So if that happens, immediately taking away something, being very clear that that is never allowed. And sometimes I think actually just taking a child out of a situation that has any reward in that moment. So if they throw something, moving them to a different room and making sure that that is not allowed at all. And then lastly, if the tantrums go on for a really long time, taking breaks and getting respite, because we all get so activated and angry by these too. So like having your, you know, partner sub in, grabbing your husband, doing something else where you're saying, like, I'm walking away for 5 minutes. You know, take turns in doing it can be a really important step as well. But
so
I think
picking up that child and physically removing them from the situation if they're hitting, spitting, kicking,
and not
scratching.
Not forcefully, like punishment, but just moving
them. No, but picking them up and moving them. Well, if you pick them up and they're squirreling all around, then you're picking up a wiggling child and they're still screaming and kicking and all.
It's
we
unpretty.
Only have 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Give us your last best advice.
Well, lastly, just remember, there are multiple people who suffer during a tantrum. Your child, who's it's a blend of anger and sadness, and us, who actually feel quite a bit of anger. And I think when we connect with sadness, it really guides empathy in some ways for patients, for non-intervention, not doing anything, so that the tantrum resolves more quickly. And then just remember that giving your child a distraction and a control over something with a small directed choice can really help them during that yelling and frustrating phase.
Thank you so much. You're listening to Radio MD. Stay well.